The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jory Slotkey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Discover Magazine. This is part two of a special double issue from January and February 2019, the State of Science issue. We begin with the state of science for environment and climate. As our world faces unprecedented change, scientists amp up efforts to understand what the future holds. There's still a window to alter course on climate change, but it's small. And what we decide to do in the next decade could make all the difference. That's the sobering takeaway from an assessment of Antarctica published in Nature in June, claiming to offer the most complete picture yet of the continent's ice sheets. Meanwhile, another international team of scientists found that Antarctica has lost 3 trillion tons of ice since 1992, causing a roughly 8-millimeter rise in sea level, or about a third of an inch. If we continue our current carbon emissions, Earth could eventually see a 150-foot rise in sea level from Antarctica's remaining ice when it melts. The findings come as climate scientists prepare to deploy new instruments on land, air, sea, and space to poke and prod Earth's climate system in the years ahead. Iceberg Sanctuary. When the Larsen C ice shelf calved in 2017, it revealed a marine ecosystem that has evolved, hidden from sight for the past 120,000 years. The first expedition to study how this ecosystem responds to dramatic environmental change set off in February. The Thwaites invasion. Western Antarctica's glaciers have been melting at an accelerating rate since the 1990s, and the remote Florida-sized Thwaites Glacier is one of the least stable on the continent. Creating better predictions for how much and how fast Thwaites might collapse is an international priority. So in April, research agencies from the U.S. and U.K. announced a roughly $50 million five-year collaboration to get a better picture of how this ice may behave in the coming decades. Uplifting story. As ice melts in western Antarctica, the bedrock below has been rising faster than predicted, a June science study shows. The increase may be enough to slow some of the ice sheet's future melting and subsequently sea level rise. Seal scientists. 14 sensor-bearing seals helped scientists gather data about Antarctica's tough-to-reach Amundsen Sea. The marine mammal's measurements, published in May, could help explain how the circumpolar deep water, a current circling the continent, affects West Antarctic ice sheet melting. Cape Town drought. Residents of South Africa's second-largest city worried their taps would run dry this year during a severe, ongoing drought. Rain eventually offered relief, and desalinization and wastewater treatment could provide future water sources. But a growing population, lack of infrastructure, and climate change mean a waterless day zero still looms. East Antarctica unstable. Until recently, scientists thought eastern Antarctica was relatively stable. But satellite data published in July shows that 2 of East Antarctica's glaciers have lost significant mass over the past 15 years, adding to the concern of sudden, rapid melting. These 2 glaciers, only a portion of the eastern ice sheet, hold enough ice to cause 16 feet in sea level rise. Antarctica in 2070. Antarctica's air could become windier and about 5 degrees Fahrenheit hotter over the next 50 years, according to a June Nature study. Its glaciers and ice sheets would thin, some collapsing entirely, and the ocean would become less salty and oxygenated with a lower pH level, and the sea level would rise nearly a foot, flooding coastal cities. Eyes in the sky. New satellites launched this year will provide data about Earth's water and ice. ICESat 2. In September, NASA launched the Ice Cloud and Land Elevation Satellite 2. Using laser pulses, ICESat 2 will measure changes in Earth's ice over the next 3 to 7 years. GRACE launch. On May 22nd, NASA's latest GRACE spacecraft, a follow-on to the original Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment, launched to monitor Earth's water, from underground stores to oceans and ice. World wakes to plastics perils. Ever since plastics rose to popularity in the 1950s, they've become an integral part of our lives, reshaping everything from transportation to healthcare and construction. They've also become a persistent pollutant. Some 18 billion pounds of the stuff winds up in the world's oceans each year. Governments and businesses alike are taking action, however. Following California's 2014 statewide ban on single-use plastic bags, cities across the country have now followed suit. And in Kenya, a year-old crackdown with fines or prison time for plastic bag use has been so successful that other African nations are considering similar laws. Even the UK and European Union move toward future single-use plastic bans. Cities from Seattle to Miami Beach and corporations like Starbucks and Disney are proposing bans on or phasing out plastic straws. But just as we're becoming more aware of the plastic pollution problem, one of our existing solutions, recycling, got caught in a lurch. China takes in a huge portion of the world's plastic waste, about 45% since 1992. But in mid-2017, China banned all imports of non-industrial plastic waste. Few countries, including the U.S., have the infrastructure or business models to process the 250 billion pounds of plastic that would have otherwise gone to China by 2030. Those governments are now chasing solutions. Of course, China's ban affects only a small portion of our plastic waste. Americans recycle just 9% of their plastics anyway. Further afield, carbon rising. In May, an observatory in Hawaii measured Earth's atmospheric carbon dioxide levels at 411 parts per billion, the highest monthly average recorded in modern times, and at a level the planet has not seen in at least 800,000 years. Hothouse Earth. The consequences of surpassing a 2 degrees Celsius increase in global temperature isn't just widespread crop failures, record-setting heat, and rising seas. An August PNAS study says it could also tip the planet into new irreversible climate patterns. Current weakening. The Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, or AMOC, moves streams of warm and cooled water between the tropics and Greenland, helping regulate Earth's climate. These ocean currents slowed to a record low in 2018. Without a strong AMOC, we can expect more summer heat waves in Europe, sea level rise on the eastern U.S., and drought in Africa's Sahel, the continent's transition zone from Sahara to Savannah. We now move on to the state of science in genetics. Researchers continue to wrangle with CRISPR, while others debate the ethics of catching criminals with public genealogy data. CRISPR's roller coaster safety ride. The genome editing tool CRISPR-Cas9 is revolutionizing the field of medicine. The technology, which took off in popularity among researchers about 5 years ago, can precisely edit DNA. The system includes two components: a DNA-cutting enzyme called Cas9, and a piece of RNA called guide RNA. A bit of guide RNA targets a specific chunk of DNA, directing Cas9 exactly where in the genome to snip. But slicing and dicing DNA isn't without risks. Some researchers have been wary from the get-go, perhaps rightly so, as details emerge about CRISPR's sometimes troubling safety record. The pro-CRISPR camp scored a win in March, when Nature Methods retracted a 2017 paper that had stirred controversy. The researchers originally said their CRISPR-edited mice had large numbers of so-called off-target mutations that resulted from Cas9 cutting at places other than the intended location. But the journal pulled the study because the authors couldn't show if the changes came from gene editing or if they were pre-existing natural variations. Over the summer, however, a series of papers looking at other aspects of CRISPR raised the specter of cancer. In June, two Nature Medicine studies reported a disturbing tendency. The gene editor was more difficult to use in healthy cells than in cells that lacked a key tumor-suppressing protein called P53. The findings suggest CRISPR might select for tumor-prone cells. If you put this back into a patient, there's a certain risk that these cells that have a P53 deficiency might cause cancer in the long term, says Bernard Schremerer, a researcher at the Karolinska Institute in Sweden and a senior author of one of the studies. And in July, UK geneticists reported in Nature Biotechnology that CRISPR sometimes removed, flipped, or swapped surprisingly large chunks of DNA at on-target sites. These large-scale rearrangements could be an issue if they involve one of hundreds of potential cancer-causing genes. The new findings highlight possible problems not just when CRISPR misses its mark, but also when it hits its target. Gaetan Borgio, a geneticist at Australian National University who was not involved in the aforementioned studies, is confident that researchers can overcome the problem, just as he's confident that there will be more findings like these to come. There are a lot of things that we don't know about the CRISPR system, he says, so I would expect more of this in the future. CRISPR's new target. The CRISPR field has mainly focused on editing DNA, but many diseases could be treated by altering RNA, the molecule that carries out DNA's instructions. Unlike DNA edits, RNA changes aren't permanent, so targeting the messenger molecule might mean fewer safety risks. In March, in the journal Cell, researchers at the Salk Institute unveiled a new CRISPR enzyme that does just that. Researchers conducted their initial tests in cells from patients with a particular type of dementia, where proteins called tau build up to unhealthy levels. The new CRISPR system successfully rebalanced tau levels. Its name, CasRx, hints at its future in medicine, according to lead investigator Patrick Su. It's absolutely inspired by our vision of its therapeutic potential, he says. Mammalian gene drive stuck in first gear. So-called gene drives, which use genetic engineering to preferentially pass on specific genes to offspring, can doom a species. Some controversial proposals have called for using them on mosquitoes to eliminate malaria or to rid islands of invasive rodents. While CRISPR-based gene drives have shown promise in insects, no one had deployed one in mammals until now. In July, researchers announced the milestone in mice, although the results scuttled optimism for a quick pest control solution. To prove how this might work one day, a team at the University of California, San Diego, attempted to spread a mutation that would turn the rodents white. But only females copied over the change, and sometimes with errors. It's much easier in mosquitoes and flies, says Australian National University's Gaetan Borgio, who was not involved with the research. Ultimately, he says, given technical hurdles and biological differences specific to mammals, he's skeptical a gene drive would work on them in the wild anytime soon. Genealogy data cracks Golden State Killer case, but is it ethical? In April, detectives finally identified Joseph James DeAngelo as the Golden State Killer, the man they think was behind more than a dozen murders and 50 rapes in California in the 70s and 80s. Police got a break in the case using a public genealogy website. They uploaded DNA samples from the crime scene to find distant relatives of the suspect. After building a family tree, investigators identified DeAngelo and confirmed the match. But now, many are wondering if the genetic sleuthing went too far. Discover asked Baylor College of Medicine bioethicist Amy McGuire, who wrote about the issue in June in the journal Science, to weigh in. Question: what ethical and legal questions does this case raise? Answer: the biggest question it raises is one of privacy and expectations about privacy. Law enforcement identified a suspect based on matching DNA not to that suspect, but to a potential distant relative whom they may not even know. Some legal scholars have questioned if law enforcement is allowed to search those commercial databases without a warrant. Right now they can, but I think the laws on all kinds of databases are still evolving. Colorado, for example, has passed a law that says how and for what purposes police can use the state forensic database. I suspect a large number of people would be very excited and supportive of law enforcement being able to access those databases to identify violent criminals, but they may not be as enthusiastic about using this information to identify suspects of more petty crime, like car theft or drug trafficking. Question: before investigators arrested DeAngelo, they had used the same method to track down someone who ended up not being a match. How big of a problem are these kinds of false leads? Answer: there is a risk there of being a false lead with this strategy. You're basically matching people from these databases to relatives, and the further out you go genetically, the less of a match it is. This could lead to law enforcement asking for DNA of people who had nothing to do with the crime. Question: what should customers be aware of before they spit in a tube and send their DNA to a company? Answer: they need to read carefully the privacy policies and the terms of service of these companies. Most of us skim through these very tiny lettered legalese types of things when we're signing up for different products and services. But they're important. They tell you the extent to which your privacy will be protected and the mechanisms used. It's all relative. Computational biologists have created the largest family tree ever, packed with a whopping 13 million people, including Kevin Bacon, over five centuries. Reporting in March in Science, researchers used public genealogy profiles to assemble the massive pedigree. They found longevity is probably less genetically determined than previously thought. But the tree's real utility may be yet to come. Adding genetic and health information could reveal much more about what causes certain diseases. Protein therapy goes in utero. For the first time, doctors used a drug to treat a genetic disease before birth. People with XL head can overheat because they lack a protein critical for sweat gland development. In an April study, doctors in Germany, Switzerland, and the United States described flagging three fetuses as having the inherited disorder. By injecting the missing protein into the amniotic sac at the right time in the fetus's development, the doctors restored the trio's ability to sweat. Researchers say the technique could be adapted for other conditions, such as some forms of facial clefts. And now we move on to the state of science in medicine. A potential HIV vaccine and new ways to decode gut woes raise hopes while cloning passes a key milestone. It's a twofer, first primates cloned. Zhongzhong and Huahua have made medical history as the first cloned primates. The feat, described in January in the journal Cell by a team of Chinese scientists, is a milestone for biomedical research. It could potentially lead to the development of new treatments for human disease. But it also makes scientists nervous about where all this might lead. Do Zhongzhong and Huahua presage the dawn of human cloning? Born in 1996, Dolly the sheep was the first cloned mammal and was followed by many more, including dogs, rabbits, and pigs. But researchers were unable to clone primates because the genes involved didn't react well to the procedure. Over the years, a handful of research institutions have tried and failed to birth a live monkey clone. The successful team at Shanghai's Chinese Academy of Sciences used the same basic method that created Dolly, but had failed in subsequent primate cloning attempts. It's called somatic cell nuclear transfer and involves transferring DNA from adult cells into eggs that have had their own DNA removed. Without the addition of sperm, the eggs are stimulated chemically to develop into an embryo that's a clone of the DNA donor. The embryo is then placed into a surrogate for gestation. The researchers modified the approach in two important ways, however. Rather than use adult cells in the DNA transfer, they used fetal cells, which react better to chemical stimuli for embryo development, says Mu Ming Pu, director of the Academy's Institute of Neuroscience and a co-author of the paper. They also fine-tuned the cell transfer process to minimize damage to the eggs. Because clones are identical, they are useful as animal models, eliminating the genetic variation that can skew results between a test group and a control group. Monkey clones could be used for testing potential treatments for human diseases, from cancer to Alzheimer's. Researchers could also genetically edit cells of cloned monkeys to model disease progression, says Pu. As for creating human clones, Pu says the research shows it can be done, but he and his team have no interest. Besides many technical difficulties that remain to be overcome, we see no justifiable reason to pursue human cloning, says Pu. Nor would the societies around the world permit such an attempt. While human cells may be cloned experimentally, for example, to research tissue regeneration, the cloning of an entire human is illegal in more than 70 countries, according to the Center for Genetics and Society. U.S. law does not ban it, but over a dozen states do. As for Zhongzhong and Huahua, closing in on their first birthdays, they're healthy and living with other lab monkeys their age. We have not seen any behavioral abnormality, says Pu. Gutting it out. Treating the human gut has always been difficult. The tools used to measure its health are imprecise and usually highly invasive. In a capsule endoscopy, for example, doctors take snapshots with ingestible cameras, but the devices don't measure chemical composition, a more revealing barometer of gut health. Stool tests are limited in what they can detect, and surgical biopsies are disruptive. New directions in research, however, are revealing potentially more accurate and less invasive ways to determine gut health. These methods could revolutionize early detection of gastrointestinal diseases, such as Crohn's disease, colon cancer, and irritable bowel syndrome. Several teams are working on biosensor capsules that are swallowed. Unlike camera pills that merely take images, the capsules carry genetically engineered bacteria programmed to detect biological signals in the gut, such as inflammation. The data can be sent to smartphones or other devices to relay information in real time. A paper published in May in Science described a biosensor capsule nearly as long as one AAA battery that successfully detected gastric bleeding in pigs. Lead author Mark Mimmy, a postdoc at MIT, says he plans to shrink the capsule for an easier swallow. In addition, Mimmy is developing sensors to measure a broad range of gut chemical signals to detect the presence of diseases, such as cancer and liver disease. Human trials remain several years away. Biosensors could also potentially be used to heal the gut by neutralizing toxins or balancing the microbiome, says the paper's senior author, Timothy Liu, a biological and electrical engineer at MIT. Gastroenterologists know that gut gases tell a tale of intestinal health, but they're also hard to measure and typically require invasive methods. In 2018, a team of researchers in Australia organized the first human trials of an ingestible sensor that measures gas production from inside the intestines. In one study, for example, published in September in Alimentary Pharmacology and Therapeutics, the capsule accurately measured hydrogen production in real time during the food fermentation in the guts of 12 people. A larger human trial is planned. Stephanie Hansel, a gastroenterologist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, likes what she sees in the burgeoning field. She regularly treats people with Crohn's, a debilitating disease that causes inflammation in the digestive tract. Testing for it involves both a capsule endoscopy and a colonoscopy, in which a camera on a flexible tube is passed through the rectum and into the intestine. If a less invasive test could offer the same or better information, patients and medical providers would be thrilled, said Hansel. Potential new weapon in HIV battle. An HIV vaccine developed by a team of international researchers has advanced farther than any other in years, raising hopes for controlling the virus that can lead to AIDS. Dan Baruch, an immunologist at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and Harvard Medical School, leads the team that created the vaccine, called Mosaic AD26-ENV, or AD26 for short. In July, a paper in the British medical journal The Lancet detailed the first human trials of AD26, conducted in Africa, Thailand, and the United States. Most of the 393 adults in the trials showed strengthened immune responses, and side effects were minimal. The vaccine also protected 67% of rhesus monkeys exposed to a simian virus similar to HIV, according to the researchers. AD26 is currently in an efficacy trial involving 2,600 people in Africa. The trial will determine if the vaccine can actually protect people from the virus. Only four other potential HIV vaccines have made it to this stage of development. The last one, tested in 2013 in the U.S., was shelved due to lack of results. Results of the AD26 trial are expected in 3 years. Baruch talked to Discover about how the vaccine works and its potential. Question: what is the biggest challenge to creating an HIV vaccine? Answer: HIV is a virus of extraordinary diversity. There are different genetic sequences of HIV throughout the world, within each country, and even within every HIV-infected individual. Question: how do you address HIV's diversity? Answer: our approach to that question, and not saying it's a complete answer, but at least a step in the right direction, is a so-called mosaic antigen. What that means is that the HIV sequences that are put into the vaccine are not from any single strain that was found in a virus from an individual, but rather the vaccine is a collage of virus strains that aims to provide the best immune responses to combat genetic diversity of HIV worldwide. Question: how well does it work? Answer: animal data and the early phase human data look promising and have warranted the advancement of this vaccine into a large-scale human trial to test whether or not it will prevent HIV infection in humans. It's definitely a step in the right direction, and it's a novel approach to try and address the question of global virus diversity. Is it good enough? We will only know that when we see the results of the efficacy trial. If successful, it could have an incredibly important health effect in curbing and ultimately controlling the HIV epidemic. Further afield, trial cut short after baby deaths. A trial involving sildenafil, better known as Viagra, was halted in July after the deaths of 11 babies. The drug was given to 93 pregnant women whose fetuses had severe abnormal growth, according to a statement from the Amsterdam University Medical Center, the hospital leading the research. Researchers had hoped the medicine, typically used to treat erectile dysfunction and high blood pressure in adults, would increase placental blood flow and encourage fetal growth, says Mark van den Broek, science communication officer at the hospital. The newborn deaths from lung disease could be linked to an adverse reaction to the medicine, he said. No chemo, no problem. Many women with early-stage breast cancer don't benefit from chemotherapy, a large international study found. The paper, published in July in the New England Journal of Medicine, focused on 6,711 women ages 23 to 75 with an intermediate risk of cancer returning after surgical removal of a tumor. In the past, many of them would have received chemotherapy as part of their treatment. The researchers wanted to find out if chemotherapy, which can have toxic side effects, was necessary. The women all had tumors that had not spread to their lymph nodes. After tumor removal, the participants were split into two groups. One received a hormone-blocking drug and chemotherapy. The other received only the hormone blocker. The groups were followed for nearly a decade. Researchers concluded that chemotherapy made no difference in the women's recovery. 9 years after the treatment, almost all the women from both treatment groups were still cancer-free. This expands the group of patients who can be safely treated without chemotherapy, said Patrick Borgen, head of the Maimonides Breast Cancer Center in Brooklyn, New York, who was not involved in the study. It's an enormous step in the right direction. A much-needed boost. As people age, their immune systems degrade. That leaves them vulnerable to infections, a leading cause of death in older people. In July, in Science Translational Medicine, researchers reported results from a trial in which people age 65 and older took a drug combination that suppresses a group of complex proteins. Previous research had shown these proteins regulate the cell cycle, including cell death, and suppressing them is thought to extend lifespan, but scientists found an indirect benefit to tamping them down, improved immune function. Over a one-year period, the 253 participants who completed the study experienced fewer respiratory infections and significantly improved their response to a flu vaccine. We've run out of time for today's episode of Discover. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jory Slodke, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time, if you have any comment or questions, please call area code 919-832-5138. Again, that's area code 919-832-5138.